Hi, this is Rick Moreno from Natopia Cider, San Diego, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 116. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we are in San Diego speaking to Rick Moreno of Newtopia Cider. There'll be more on that chat in just a moment. Welcome back to all the regular subscribers of Cider Chat. We got a great episode this week. And if you are new to this podcast, well, hey, thanks for coming into our party, which never seems to stop. There are over 116 episodes right now. And I was recently contacted by Jordan on Facebook, on the Cider Chat Facebook page. And he put out, you know, asking, which was the episode on forced carbonation? And I drew a total blank. I needed my notes. And I finally did find out it was episode 70, 71, with Jep Agence of Feho Cider in Denmark. And before Jep and I began talking, I spoke about forced carbonating CO2, which is that typical gas that people put into actually many different libations, but in this case, cider, and how to do that, at least how I do that. There's a number of different options, but for like somebody like myself who's non-commercial, this is how I do it. And I was able to search that, thankfully, for the internet and for computers. But there's a lot on our plate right now if you are new to this gig and our conversations out here in Ciderville. And frankly, I was going to take this week off and just read you all a little love poem that I was working on with the Talking Palms, but they convinced me not to do that because there are so many fantastic conversations that I have in the queue, not necessarily ready to go because I have a lot of editing, but in the queue that have to get out there, I mean, weeks ahead here. So I'm doing that. And it was really easy for me to edit once I got rolling the episode that we're going to be doing this week with Rick from Newtopia Cider. That was fantastic. I'm going to hold back on that for now. In the meanwhile, I want to come back in just a moment and share with you my thoughts on what you might be wanting to think about for the coming months if you are in the Northern Hemisphere of the world. So I'll be right back with that shortly. I have the first reminder of this episode, which is make sure you are racking over your cider. Do not put that off, especially if you're a non-commercial maker who is new to this game and listening, or even if you're a startup or you've been doing it for a long time. I'm sure you know this already. You have it on your books. But those of us who are doing it more as a hobby, make sure that you get that cider off the lees that's dropping on the bottom of your carboy, which is a glass vessel, right? Some people might be putting it in different things. Unless you keep on stirring in the lees, which is good. I'm not going to go into all that right now. But the main thing is you want to be checking that. If most likely you pressed in the fall or you got your juice in the fall and it fermented. That's the primary fermentation. It went through and then there was precipitants dropping off onto the bottom of your carboy. And that is the lees, or what I like to call the schmutz. If you leave it there and don't rack it off again, then what happens is it has a potential for, a really good potential for leaving off odors and off flavors that you probably don't want, because those are essentially dead yeast cells and other little organisms hanging out there. So do rack. In fact, that's what I did all weekend while it was raining. I got down to the carboys, which I hadn't looked at since I had my surgery in November on my shoulder. I couldn't do anything, but they were just sitting there, just humming away the cider, and it was perfect timing to rack it all over. In fact, that's how I really manage my cider in terms of clarifying it. I do a lot of racking. It's not that big of a deal to do for me. I'm not sure about everybody's setup, but for me to have a clean carboy and keep on letting that drop down, the precipitance drop down, rack it off of the lees, I do that a number of times. Shoot, you know, if I'm not going to be bottling until May, there's a good chance that I'm going to be racking off maybe about five times between the initial primary fermentation and that bottling. In fact, if I move the carboy right before the night before that I'm going to be bottling, I'll rack it off in the morning too if I get any kind of schmutz in the bottom. And that's mainly for presentation, just to have it clarified. I don't have anything wrong with cloudy cider, except that if it's sitting in the bottle, it will eventually drop down. I did rack off some, what was it? I was using a yeast KV1116. Yeah, 116. And I really liked its profile. So I decided, you know, I only had 3 gallons, so I'm going to bottle it. And I used the rest to top off all the carboys that I had sitting there on my table. There was a bit of airspace. So I used that juice from the 3 gallon, topped off all my existing carboys, and then the rest I bottled. And I put in just a little bit of priming sugar, which I never ever do. So I sure hope I don't have any bottle bombs. And what I mean by that is that the bottles can actually, you know, burst and be dangerous. So I picked some flip-top bottles, some hefty ones. I have it in a wooden box that I layered with a plastic bag. Put, I think I've had about 8 bottles in there. They're about 750 mil bottles, so they're pretty big. And then I partitioned each one with some paper bags that I just folded up. And so I figure if there is any kind of burst, I mean, really like a bango burst, it won't hit the other bottle, because then it could be just like a chain reaction, right? And I have it in a very cool area in my home that won't be warming up until, shoot, probably early June or so. So by then, I'll be able to check and keep on looking at it. And I did this, originally I was thinking about kegging it because I thought it would be fun, but I did this because I wanted to kind of just watch that process. I'm getting used to this yeast. All my ciders this year, I decided I'm not adding any sugar to it unless I'm priming it. And priming, again, is just to kickstart any remaining yeast cells that are in the cider to create some carbonation, a little bit of fizz in there. I like that. That's fun. I don't always do that. I love still cider, but I'm playing with that. And I'm definitely just doing straight cider. I'm not adding anything because I want to get to know the orchards that I was scrumping apples at, essentially, pulling these apples out and getting their terroir. That is tons of fun for me. That's what I'm into now. I'm not so much doing a lot of add-on of fruit ciders or anything like that. So I'll keep you posted on that. Make sure that you do rack over your cider. Do not put that off. And make sure that once you do rack it over, that you fill that gap of liquid and airspace that could be in your carboys with more cider. Don't fill it with water. That's not a good idea. You could add more apple juice, you know, sweet cider if you want, but I would recommend heating it up ahead of time. And then you could also just add some commercial cider, get some, you know, mass kind of produced commercial cider that's kind of inert in a way, and just pour that in. I think inert's the right word for that. You know, it's just not going to really change the yeast too much. And top it off. The main thing is top it off. I always try to save cider from the previous year for topping off. So these are the little tricks of the trade that you don't realize you're in the middle of. And you're like, oh, crap, what am I going to do now? I have all this headspace. So, that's the way to go. If anybody has any other thoughts on that, you could post that on the Cider Chat Facebook page, and we could have a little chit-chat there. Or, of course, you could always send me an email, ria@ciderchat.com. The second key thing you want to be thinking about right now is planting your fruit trees this spring, or getting rootstock or scion wood for grafting. And I'm putting in on an order with friends, getting some pear rootstock that I'm going to graft some peri-pear scion wood on. So that's great. The resources that we're using is Cummings Nursery. I'm getting outstanding semi-vigorous clonal stock. That's a word. Excellent anchorage. That means the roots are good. Tolerant of soil diseases. Very resistant to fire blight. Tolerant of low temperature. Induces early heavy production. So that's what I'm getting. Some pear root stock for peri pears. I also want to recommend Fedco Trees. Their catalog is out. It's just delightful to look at. You still could get the orders in by March 9th. If you haven't listened to the episode with John Bunker, he had two episodes, episode both 16, where we talk generally about apple trees in the U.S., and episode 28, where he provides great insight on tree identification. They're both definitely worth a listen to. John Bunker is just like an American apple hero. And then also to kind of get you in the groove, you could listen to Colin Scott of E&J Scotch Orchards. He is selling saplings of apple varieties such as Northern Spy and Redfield, plus others. He's located in Western Massachusetts in my spot of Ciderville, and he is in the town of Buckland. So if you listen to his episode number 93, we talk about apple storage, but we also talk about grafting. And there at that episode 93, you can find his contact info in the show notes. So do think about these two things, racking over and getting your orders in, because before you know it, spring is going to be here. This past January, I was in San Diego, and I took the opportunity to meet up with Rick Moreno of Newtopia Cider. This is a $1.5 million build-out of a cidery that is, oh man, between now and next year, there's going to be a lot going on here. And Rick is a dude to just keep your eye on, because I don't know where he gets his energy, but somehow he does it. And from all I could see, he does it with a really sweet smile on his face. We had a lot of fun, the nose and I, meeting Rick, sipping the ciders. It is a fusion kind of cidery in that, not that they're fusing the two styles together. Well, yeah, they kind of are. But essentially, there is the modern side of the cidery, and on the other side, well, that has all these stainless steel tanks, and on the other side, it's barrels. Really interesting business model. Just dig the whole scene there. I really enjoyed the ciders. Each one was super duper unique. Didn't have a chance to drink his or taste his heritage ciders because they are, as you might expect, for a cidery that's almost 1 year old in April. They're not out yet, because that's what happens with heritage ciders, folks. They need some time to settle. And I know many of you know that. Modern ciders, you could kind of kick out in like 6 weeks, but those traditional real ciders, in terms of there's nothing added, they take more time. So he's working those two different worlds and building from there. So without further ado, let's head to San Diego and grab a glass with Rick Moreno of Newtopia Cider.
Oh my goodness, and there's a flight of ciders coming over right now, looking really, really pretty.
Take you from left to right. Our flagship cider that we just recently took a medal for 4 months ago was our semi-sweet. Mm-hmm. And so I'll go out and forage eucalyptus leaves from Hoyt Park East, which is just a park about 2 miles east of here. And I'll bring the eucalyptus leaves back here in bushels.
Wow.
And then I'll send them to San Francisco to get food grade. And then I send them back. And then I'll blend those eucalyptus leaves with hibiscus flowers. And it's got this minted sprig, off dry, just really herbaceous.
Yeah, I'm getting that really minty.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things I love coming back to California for is just like that whiff of eucalyptus.
Yes.
And you know, you go out at night and you're just like feeling after the day, all the herbs out there. It's just
precisely
insane. And it does something to your body.
It does.
You know, it's so beautiful.
It does. It's quite nice. It's very serene. It gives a little bit of, the eucalyptus gives a little bit of a nice bite towards it, blended with that hibiscus flower.
Wow.
And herbaceous is key, especially out in San Diego, where kombucha is also very popular.
Yeah.
It kind of sits on that similar type of profile.
Yeah, you're carbonating your ciders.
Precisely.
Of course,
yep.
But I'm not seeing a lot of bubbles. So
correct.
What are you doing there?
So we're just infusing our cider with anywhere between 2.2 to 2.3 grams per milliliter. I like the mouthfeel of the cider just a little bit, but I also like the flavor of having it kind of semi-still.
Yes, yeah. You know, it's interesting because when I first sipped it, mm-hmm. it came off with that fizz, and mm-hmm. then it really diminished, mm-hmm. you know, so it puckered mm-hmm. up. It didn't mm-hmm. pucker up. I didn't get a pucker, but mm-hmm. it really kind of like woke up my mouth mm-hmm. in a way, in that same way that eucalyptus does.
Precisely.
When I'm arriving into California.
Yeah.
And then it, you know, it kind of like led me in. Really
yep.
nice, man. Really nice.
Yeah, no, yeah, the eucalyptus is very prominent, as you can tell, in our city. I just wanted to highlight that because it, you know, sometimes gets a bad name out here because of the low roots that it has and it, all the trees fall. So I wanted to give an extra special story behind it and think of it in an optimistic way.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, you are. You're totally getting it optimistic. And, mm-hmm. because everybody gets so happy around the eucalyptus
yes,
trees. You
absolutely.
Know, it's like, you're in California,
yes.
sunny, and all that.
Yeah. I'm engaging a lot with the uneducated beer connoisseur, the uneducated cider connoisseur, and the uneducated wine connoisseur. And so created a four core that hits every part of your palate. So this is kind of off dry, herbaceous, semi-sweet. This is our Belgian Saison cider. It's quite nice. I use a Belgian Saison beer blend, and I blend it with pineapple, elderberry is the color, and cardamom is the spice.
Wow.
And it's quite lovely. It lends towards the fruity, phenolic, funky type of cider. It's our number one seller, to be quite frank.
Interesting. Okay. So Rick just said elderberry is a color. So we're mm-hmm. looking at a very deep, rich elderberry. Mm-hmm. And if people aren't aware of what elderberry looks like,
mm-hmm.
if you plucked it off the elderberry tree, it would get all over your hand and mm-hmm. leave it really mm-hmm. kind of purpley.
Like inky, purpley.
Inky, yeah.
Yep.
And probably be hard to get off.
It is. Oh, yeah.
But who cares, because you just were in the elderberry bush, right?
It is. You know, I love the elderberry because, it increases the acuity of your eyes. So mm-hmm. it's beneficial for you from that perspective.
Oh, my gosh.
I really enjoy that. I
Ooh.
Know.
It's like a berry delight, but it's not just berry, you know?
Yeah, the pineapple's kind of an afterthought. I just wanted it to be in the back end to clear that palate.
Oh, my God, the pineapple just totally comes up.
That's lovely.
As you thought of it as an afterthought,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
it's kicking up on mm-hmm. the taste buds. Wow,
yeah,
that's nice blending.
We serve the all of our ciders at 40 degrees. What we found out is once we cup that particular cider and we get to about 45 to 50 degrees, the cardamom gets very spicy. All of the flavors really come to nose.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. You know, it's not for the faint of heart. It's 8.2%.
Wow,
so.
It's one of those like... slow creepers,
it
isn't
is
it?
Yes, it's like a tropical creeper. It's very easy to consume.
Yeah,
so we
it
have
has
to...
that sweetness that people
mm-hmm.
kind of expect with cider.
Yeah,
and
this next cider I really enjoy. Actually, this is our wild cider, so I'll take 1,800 pounds a month of the Marionberry, which I'm sure you're familiar with. It's the Cabernet of blackberries mm-hmm. up in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And I work with a particular farmer up there where I'll go up and I'll take these, harvest with them, and ship it down. I'll make our wild cider, which is kind of a... I use champagne yeast, so it's very off-dry, funky. It's kind of tarty. Sweetness is kind of an afterthought in this. It almost drinks like a French Pinot. I really enjoy this. Believe it or not, I take this and I'll put 3 ounces of gin in it, and I'll blend my wild with gin, and it's so nice.
Okay. But, now, what's the color that you... How would you describe that color?
Yeah, it's almost like when it first comes off batch, it's like this just really unique, like ruby, translucent. At times it even comes off as an amethyst right when it comes off. As it rests, though, it's almost like a... Yeah, like a pinky peach.
Peach, I was going to say peach, yeah.
Like a pinchy peach type of...
Yeah, a little peach going on there.
And
a little reddish peach, almost like a red grapefruit kind of color, too.
Like a ruby red grapefruit,
And you know what's interesting? I know that you're in the San Diego scene where craft beer is such a hot scene.
Huge topic.
And rightly so. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you serve these ciders on this little flight here, and there's like this little, like, head going on, you know, a little rim that kind of, if you're like that craft beer, you know, switch over, or somebody's used to that, that's familiar, and it helps the market.
It does. You know, it's nice to be able to have that, you know, it's that tulip nose. Again, you know, cider's 90% nose, 10% palate for us, and that's quite lovely.
Isn't it? I don't think there's no gin. I am a gin person.
Are you?
Yes.
Nice.
I'm an everything person.
I agree.
But I don't think this needs any gin at all. I mean, that is... Now, what's the ABV on this?
That one's 6.5.
6.5.
And
What's the four core?
In terms of ABV or just...
Yeah, ABV.
So our semi-sweet is 5.8. Our Belgian pineapple is 8.2. Our wild is 6.5. And our IPC is 6.5 as well.
6.5. So we got four different ciders here and a range of ABVs.
Yeah. I think ABV carries for us big body. And so I didn't want to, you know, I don't want to dilute recipe. I wanted to make sure it came off how it was supposed to be. You know, hence a little bit bigger of the body. I enjoy
really
that.
Beautiful. Wow. Could taste that. Oregon.
Right
there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it's
beautiful too. It's a really, I mean, we have it, we're sipping these ciders right now in that classic kind of cider glass sampler, which is a little fluted and a little ribbed on the bottom, a wide mouth on the top. But this would be beautiful in a fluted wine glass or something like that.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. That would...
Yeah.
I might have to take you up on that, actually.
That's very classy.
Yeah, it's... presentation's important. You know what I mean? It's... Cider's very sophisticated, magical, and fun.
Wow.
So we want to... you know, it's introducing these palate teasers to the uneducated connoisseur, you know, that may want to get into cider or has previously had a macro cider. That doesn't understand that cider can be different, you know, dry, off dry, sweet, bone dry, you know. So it's, this next one is our Indian Pale Cider. This is kind of a nod to San Diego. You know, we love our hops out here, and the reason why hops do so well out in San Diego is because our water is so hard. And so the hops tend to do better in hard water. More minerals to expand that flavor. So what I decided to do is choose the Mosaic hop. And we kept this relatively dry. I think it finished at like 10 original gravity.
Okay.
We always ferment down to zero. And then we use, you know, certain adjuncts to blend in that are fermentable, right? And then some adjuncts that, like, for example, like putting cider in wood creates a unique characteristic and sometimes gives it a bump in ABV considering what type of barrel you put it in, right?
If it's a rye whiskey or if it's a wine barrel or whatever.
So, you know, we dry hopped this Mosaic IPC and we also used our champagne yeast. To make sure that it continued to create that aromatic, effervescent nose, at least. The hop is nice because it, you know, when you dry hop the hop in cider, you probably get aromatics. But we changed our process and actually we rouse for about 24 hours. And it really extracts a lot of the oils.
So are you saying dry hop then when you roused?
We do. Okay. Well, dry hop, you know, and temperatures anywhere between 50 to 65 degrees, depending on the hop. And depending on if it's wet hopped, this particular one is dry hopped. I also have a wet hopped here, I think, we just did, which is very rare. It's only done once a year. But yeah, this is for our beer connoisseurs, and it's drier. It's probably the most bitter and drier of our ciders. Bitter is a palate characteristic that is prominent in San Diego. Everyone's, we have a bunch of hop heads out here, you know. So
That's a hoppy cider.
Oh, yes, it is. Yeah, so...
And the hop heads are going to dig that.
They do. They come in here and...
Immediately, they'll be biting into that. You know,
immediately.
Classic thing.
Classic thing.
Craft beer.
Yeah. You know, it's the Indian Pale Cider is nice because it's a single hop varietal and it's blended.
I mean, that's crazy now. Okay, let's just back up the door here because we hear that like the India Pale Cider, which is really only something that we're hearing. Thank you so much. Coming out of San Diego.
That's right. Yep.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been seeing hop ciders for a couple of years now for sure.
Oh yeah.
But it was really coming to San Diego that I've been hearing folks wanting to call their ciders IPA ciders.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like a bastardization of the whole IPA thing. But that's true for Americans because when Americans first started using the term Imperial IPA, the Russian Imperial Stout, the Europeans were pretty ticked off about that. They're like, there's nothing you could call Imperial except Russian Imperial Stout.
Right.
And now we have, you know, Imperial IPA, we have Imperial Pilsners, the whole sky's the limit. So why not call this a...
An IPC.
IPC.
IPC, yeah. An Indian Pale Cider. You know, I've even heard some IPAs called Indian Pale Apple. I've seen that. But you know that is you know very popular here just because
is that though because our San Diegans are they really choosing that kind of terminology because of the introduction into a craft beer scene of the cider? Is that really the reason why choosing that kind of moniker for that particular cider, do you think? Pushing that,
it is like so. My own personal philosophy, and this is just for me, is you know, is if we didn't have craft beer drinkers in San Diego, craft cider would be very difficult to open to a mass market. Fortunately, San Diegans have very complex palates because of beer,
right?
And because of 15 ingredients in beer to make it, so they're able to relate to something because. Great, I've heard it has a hop in it.
Yeah.
And if they think water and hops go well, wait till you try an apple and a hop. You know, there's different characteristics, and I think they're able to relate to that, and so that's a very easy crossover for them to open their minds up, because typically you know, I get a lot of closed-minded, cider's for sorority girls and sweet otter pops,
right.
And it's important to provide a little bit of insight you know, to the big drinkers. You know, we have gentlemen in three-piece suits, and we have, you know, that love their wine connoisseurs, and then we have gentlemen in their big beer bellies and big beards that are sitting right there having this for the first time,
right?
And talking politics and talking, you know, talking cider, and it's important for us to be able to, you know, provide some type of relation to what's huge here, which is beer.
Right, your full market. You're not just going to one little niche market, and you are, you know, able to hit the road running a little bit in a unique market in that way.
Precisely.
Versus in other areas of the U.S. and never mind the rest of Sarderville.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. We use old world wine processes and we blend them with new world beer ingredients. And so how I got into it is, you know, my wife's a wino, I'm a beer guy. This is the only libation that I could make for us to not fight over. So that's how this came to.
All about keeping the peace.
It is compromise.
Yes.
So you know, the four core is nice to give a nice introductory of what cider could be versus what they've had in the past.
So the four core is a classic flight of ciders that you serve. It's just if they want to get a flight of ciders, this is what they would be served.
They do. We're pretty stern. If no one has been into our facility and they've not experienced cider, the four core is something that they have to try before you're able to even evolve into anything else. It's essentially guiding them, you know, to what they may want, you know, because sometimes they just have no idea. They've never experienced cider like this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I start them off with this, and then based on what, you know, where they enjoy the most, if it's sweeter, off dry, tart, bitter, herbal, I'll then be able to go into something else that they might
you know, enjoy or never even thought about even trying.
Really hit the whole gamut there. I mean,
yeah, and these are just, you know, again, these are our modern seasonals, you know, that come out of, custom made conical stainless steel. And so introducing modern seasonals to craft beer drinkers and craft wine drinkers in San Diego is a nice introduction. We have our old world heritage ciders that are coming off Petite Syrah, wet whiskey, wet rum, wet gin, wet bourbon, Chardonnay barrels, and brandy barrels as well. And so, you know, that is very funky, farmhouse-esque. We're incorporating a lot of Brett Lacto into our barrel-aged ciders, which, you know, a lot of wine enthusiasts, they think indifferent of that kind of stuff.
Well, they're not used to that at all.
No.
They're like, no, keep that out of the vineyard. Yeah, no doubt.
And we welcome it. You know, there's certain, there's certain bugs in those barrels that, you know, help that create some uniqueness to it. So we want to make sure that the rest of San Diego has the option to experience that.
So two different worlds happening at Newtopia. And so
let's talk about
the name Newtopia. I mean, I don't want to miss that out because you are straddling two worlds.
Precisely.
The new and the old.
So
not new and the old, but the new. In terms of modern style of fermenting. And the more traditional style.
Precisely. So Newtopia, let's chat about that. So, you know, it's kind of a philosophy. Newtopia is more of a state of mind versus a product that you drink or a place where you go hang out. So Newtopia is derived from a couple different philosophies. One is Sir Isaac Newton, right, who discovered gravity when the apple fell on his head, hence new in the Newtopia. Utopia being the ideal society, which is essentially unachievable. It's something that, you know, where everyone, everything's self-sustainable, you know, it's eco-friendly, things are the ideal. I wanted to make a new version of what that society was when it came to cider consumption. Sorry about the helicopters. We're right by Top Gun Miramar here.
Yeah, so, we are. We're, you know, San Diego's right on the border, and you could hear... there's a lot of military around here. A lot of folks working in the military and a lot of services for Homeland Security.
Yeah, and so the Marines come over here all the time. With their wives, of course. And, you know...
they're using that as an excuse to come
over. They are. I hate to say it, but, you know, women get it. You know, I have a tasting panel every Friday at 3 o'clock. And it's 15 people. Out of the 15, 13 are women. And the reason why I do that is because when I ask a man what's our cider taste like, they give me one answer. When I ask a woman that, they give me 15 adjectives. And so, and not only that, but letting a lady's palate's a little bit more acute than a man's. Not to discount us out there, guys, but I think a little bit more sensitive to that. And so when the Marines come over, they boast how their wife's been ranting and raving and they've never had cider and they've traveled all around the world and they've never had an American cider, and
what?
So...
Well, they've been traveling around the world.
What are you doing?
Get out of here. There's cider all around
there
the world.
There is.
Whatever.
So, you know, like, you know, it's one of those where they're just, you know, it's it's a stigma. They think it's...
Except they don't know that cider founded this country.
Precisely.
And it's like as, like, you know, American as you could get.
Yep. It's a fight. I have to continuously re-educate. It's... it's okay, though. Yeah, it's okay. We're getting there.
At this stage, I mean, that's exactly what has to happen.
It is.
So it's a balance.
Yeah, it's a balance. And then, I don't know what we have here. Ooh.
Is this from the Heritage?
Is this our Mellow Malice? Which one is this? Oh, okay. Got it. So this is a modern season. This is Banana Apple Bum. So we use 220 pounds. And actually, this is because of one of... I was influenced by you on this one.
Oh, good. Wait, say that up a little bit. You're influenced by Cider Chat.
No, yes. I was inspired by Cider Chat to create this banana apple bum, which is made with banana and brown sugar in the secondary, which kicks up the ABV to about 10%.
Oh,
And so
throwing in the banana.
Yes.
How are those working for
amazing.
You?
Amazing.
I mean, clarity. I mean, this
yes.
is a really clear cider.
It
just
is.
To mention that. It's
yep.
like a yep. like a very light
yep.
straw.
Yep.
Very bright cider.
Yep. Yep. The
banana, the brown sugar.
Yep.
Coming
yep.
through. Mm.
It.
I love that smell of banana. I have to say that your banana is a lot more defined than my banana ever was. How many bananas are you putting in for?
For example, a 160-gallon batch, we'll put in anywhere between 220 to 260 pounds of bananas. And there's some good secrets there. You know, we don't.
Yeah.
It's how do you make banana bread?
Mm-hmm.
How do you extract
a little bit of this and that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you extract, you know, how does that banana get to full maximum capacity so you can achieve terminal bricks, right? Is that what they call it? Terminal
yeah.
bricks?
Yeah, you don't want, you know, a brown banana is just fermenting.
Yep, precisely.
It's not on the rotten stage
right.
yet.
Right. I welcome that. So
mm-hmm.
so we decided to do this. Believe it or not, this was a huge influence of Cider Chat.
Awesome.
And
man, that's cool.
It's very, very popular. We have to sell these in 10-ounce pours.
Wow. What's the ABV on this one?
10%.
10%. Well, you got that additional. It's a sweet. So, you know, some of the banana comes through on the nose,
mm-hmm.
and that brown sugar is, you know, people taste like brown sugar thinking like Toll House cookies or something like that, but it's not like that
it's
at
like
all.
Tangy. It's like tangy
yeah,
a little bit.
It's a little tangy, totally,
mm-hmm.
with that, because you have
mm-hmm.
the apple as the base.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, man, 10%, that's a dangerous cider.
It is. It is. That's why we only serve those in 10-ounce pours. We have 16-ounce goblets, 10-ounce, glasses for high-gravity cider,
mm-hmm.
which, again, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to discount the recipe if it comes out like that. You know, I want it to keep it like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Very interesting finish, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
mm-hmm.
I'm a big banana fan.
Mm-hmm.
I think it goes super well with the cider. It's an excellent commercial example of that.
Mm-hmm.
But your unique style. And the finish of the banana is right there.
Oh, yeah.
As if I just kind of had that perfect banana.
Yeah.
And
yep.
that residual sweetness is
mm-hmm.
really nice, nice and lingering there.
Yeah, it's lovely. And if you wouldn't have talked about it, I wouldn't have made it.
Oh,
so,
right on.
Thank you.
Yay.
Yeah,
yay
you guys.
For Ciderville.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Yeah, so... you know, we tend to create ciders that, you know, people will hopefully one day be able to take home. We're canning these, so those will be going in 16-ounce tall boys here at the end of January.
Now, what are you canning here? Because I saw you have a list on the website.
We do.
So the IPA,
yep.
or the IPC.
IPC, yep. IPC, the wild, the Belgian pineapple, and our semi-sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And
coming out in like four packs.
Yep, four
okay.
pack, 16-ounce tall boys. Believe it or not.
Nice.
Cans are huge here. We
yeah.
can take them surfing, skiing, and hiking all in the same day in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
So,
are you using mobile canning?
We are for now.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a couple canning lines. I'm just perfecting our process right now. So that we can go in very, very big distribution here at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
We did, year to date, we did roughly, you know, 2,250 barrels of cider year to date. We have three more months until we're a year old, so I'm tracking to do about roughly 3,300 barrels of cider by April 1st.
Well, that's a pretty righteous amount.
Yeah.
You know, a year into like a new cider, everything that's going on, and you're straddling both types
mm-hmm.
of fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't really want. I know you have it on one side of the building,
mm-hmm.
on the other, but
mm-hmm.
there could be some cross.
There is, yes.
You know.
So we have to use a separate bottling line,
yeah.
separate canning line. Everything's got to be in barrel. Nothing touches stainless steel. All of our Old World will be in 500 ml bottles that are in spirits, and then 750s for our wine program.
Nice.
So everything will be contained. That's very important to
mm-hmm.
us, of
mm-hmm.
course. But
so currently, when folks come here, they can get cans?
They can, yeah. Fresh right off tap. We have 32-ounce crowlers that we pour immediately right off tap. We do have a members club, and so the only core that the public can take is our four core in cans. If you're a member, you have access to everything.
Yeah.
So that's very popular for us. It gives us the ability to do just really micro batches, one-time limited releases. And believe it or not, on the weekends we have lines around this place.
Wow,
it is. It's very cool. It's exciting.
I love
exciting.
Hearing that. I love hearing that. And that must feel good. So I want to talk about that.
Yeah.
Why Newtopia Cider? Why did you dive into cider?
That's a great question. So I own a craft beer bar, whiskey, and mezcal bar called Toronado. Toronado, there's one in San Diego. There's one in San Francisco. I own the one up in Seattle. Hence my acclamation around the apple. I've been selling cider across my bar for a number of years, and I thought to myself, you know, this is such an underserved market, and I think there's so much more to be had here, particularly in other areas of the country.
Yeah.
And I knew San Diego was struggling for something like that. I just started to play around with it and tour a few facilities up there. Mm-hmm. I have my favorites up there that I get inspired by. And I just wanted to take those flavors down to Southern California to open up people's minds.
Yep.
So well, that was...
That's a good enough reason right there.
Yes.
So you weren't really making beer. You were selling beer. You were in the trade.
I've been home vintning for 10 years. I've been making beer for 5.
Okay.
Most recently, beer has been the most previous, most recent 5 years has been beer. 10 years has been home vintage.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been playing with it. I've been really honing in on the cider recipes for about 2 years. It took me about 2 years to really get in the ratios and being able to understand my fermentation. One thing I did not disclose that I'll share with you guys is that people, process, and technology are the biggest pillars in our business. So I leverage technology a lot here. I have a PLC that automates all of my fermentation that I can keep
on
my cell phone anywhere in the world that I go. For example, I'll fly in nomadic vintners and distillers to come train me for 2 weeks at a time. I just had a gentleman from Austria, one from Barcelona, one from Walla Walla come in, and they'll stay here. I have a Gypsy Brewery Street around the corner, and I'll show you guys that. But they eat here, they sleep here, they shower here, they don't leave. I don't get them a hotel, I don't get them a car. So that way they only have one throat to choke. Right? And so they...
Brilliant.
And so I come here straight for 2 weeks, and I'm embedded. We work for 16 hours a day. We talk about recipe development. And then I also give them access remotely, so that way they can view my ferments from anywhere in the country and send me a text message or an email on what I could be doing or how I could curb this. And so I constantly get that education from those that are outside of the U.S. So we can make it our own new American cider, right? That's
right.
The goal.
Right.
This is our cider.
Yep.
We gotta harness that, you know? So I love having that automation. It gives me consistency in cider, which is sometimes difficult. It's not like beer. Beers, they're always pushing for consistency. I get it. But, you know, we're a craft cider facility that has different vintages, different picks, different orchards that we pull from. The terroir is different, and every single one of our private estate orchards. We source locally here in Julian, Temecula, Santa Cruz, Sebastopol, Northern California, Mendocino, Hood River, Chelan, Wenatchee, essentially Eastern Washington. And so it's a logistical nightmare.
Yeah, I was
crush on
say,
site.
Holy smokes. Wow.
We have...
So are you... it's being crushed and juiced and then shipped?
Depending on what estate.
Okay.
Sometimes we'll go up to a state and we'll help with crushing, which we did this last harvest. We took, October, November, December... which are the latter part of the harvest. The bricks tend to be a bit higher, right? And we took the drive and went upside and helped pick and crush on site. I took my whole team up there so that way they understand what goes into this.
Yes, it's a lot.
It's devastating. I had no idea. This is hard.
It's hard.
This is a hard job.
And it gives you an appreciation for every glass of cider.
You're absolutely right.
That you bring
right.
to your lips.
Yep.
And you know, what's interesting too, you're sourcing it from these different places, and if you're crushing it and pressing at different spots, then you have different tools at different spots which are going to lend different profiles to that juice, whether it is a hydraulic, mm-hmm. you know, press, mm-hmm. pneumatic mm-hmm. press, or
bladder,
you know,
or
rack and cloth.
Right.
So yep. I don't know the range that you're using, but I imagine there's a pretty good range.
It's all the above. I mean,
yeah.
Like the smaller guys, I mean, it's not uncommon for them to have the old school press.
What's an old school press?
Like this is our traditional, you know, our traditional crank press.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
it's a little bit bigger, and it probably holds about 160 gallons.
True, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
it's just...
There's definitely a lot of people all over the world using a hand crank press where it's just pushing into the basket.
That's all it is. Well, here we have a water bladder press that we use. You know, we'll bring, I think we brought in a total of 144,000 pounds of apples on site here where wow. we washed, crushed, pressed.
You're doing that out in the parking lot?
We do it right here.
Right in that room
we'll
there.
Do, we'll
yeah.
do a community press, and so I'll
nice.
Call in patrons. There'll be about 30 of us, nice. And you know, we'll all participate, and it's getting that community involved
great.
To know what goes behind this
That's
this
fantastic.
Work of art right here. So
that's great.
Yeah, it's gratifying. It's extremely rewarding.
Was there anything that surprised you since starting this, like almost a year into it, and you got a whole bunch of stuff going on the map? Is there anything that's like, I didn't realize this about cider or the apple?
Yeah, you know, I didn't know, you know, I think when it came to our heritage ciders, and I you know, coming from doing 5 gallon batches at home, shifting to 160 to now 240 barrels, you know, close to 4,000 gallons at a time for men. I mean, that's just it still blows my mind. I can't believe I'm even doing this. I'm in awe.
Yeah.
But I can't say, you know, I can't take all credit for it. Because of the craft beer community and the cider community, I've been able to reach out, you know, to other cider houses up in the Northwest, and they're very helpful for me. I think being able to have consistent cider that can be made in 14 days, or it can be made in 4 years, you know, or even 12 months, for example. All of our barrel aged, you know, 3, 6, 9, 12 months, it's constant tasting. I mean, you're constantly checking that.
You have to, because you're losing a certain percentage
right.
of your beer in the barrel. People
yes.
aren't aware. There's always an evaporation.
Yes.
You know, the kind of the angels.
The angel share,
yeah,
yes.
Which is like a distilling term. But,
yes.
you know, in terms of cider, you put cider in the barrel, you're going to lose about 6%.
Yep.
And it's going to change in the barrel over time. So
oh, boy.
How do you manage that? Any kind of tips on yep. barrel aging yep. that you've learned?
Yep. So we tend to start closely tasting 18 hours a day after about 30
hours
days
a day
for 30 days.
Okay,
and so I'll
yep.
break that up. I have, you know, I have a night ciderist, and then I have a day ciderist. And so they'll prepare tastings for me to come in after 30 days with barrel and taste for 18 hours on the hour to try that. So we'll do that at 30 days. We'll do that 40 days, 60, and then 90. I don't usually let ciders go beyond 8 months. The ones that we do get to that length of time, we incorporate co-ferments. And so this is something that's unique. We're big fans of Graf ciders.
Graf Cider in New York?
Graf Ciders yes, those guys are, first of all, amazing.
Okay.
But in San Diego, it's a genre of ciders that incorporate unfermented beer wort that we co-ferment in barrel over a length of time, which creates a very unique body in the cider. A very unique nose, and then you get in wood, and then it warms up everything, right? That's what that does. So mm-hmm. We've just started toying with that. You've heard of a Graf beer,
mm-hmm.
where it's
mm-hmm.
51% apple, 49% That was the opposite way, right? Was it 49% apple, 51% malt? So we're not going to that extent. We're doing, you know, 60-40, 70-30 co-ferment blends just in barrel right now. So that, that is something that we're...
So you haven't really served it to your customers
yet? They're not allowed to have it yet.
When's
the... Yes, they're not allowed to have that one
yet. When do you see that release coming up?
Well, what I'll do is I'll send you a 500 ml bottle of that.
I would love to try it.
And that'll be unique. We are using different types of enzymes to reduce that gluten in that wort so that it gets below 10 ppm of gluten, which is huge for our consumers.
Yeah.
I don't want to discount them. We have a lot of celiac
patrons
and we have celiac employees that believe in this business.
Right.
And they're all welcome here now.
Right.
So that's been a huge turn of the century for craft beer.
You're like the cross trainer of cideries, you know, because you've got like that wine palate type of thing. You have that new cider drinker intro, and then you have this other level of the heritage, which you seem like you're just on the cusp of releasing.
I'll give you. I have my director of barrel ops here. I've partnered with, and he actually works for one of the most prominent breweries here in San Diego. And he gives me a very unique sense of depth of flavor. He's a big purist when it comes to heritage ciders. It's something that he's very strong in, that I lean on for.
Good.
You know, because I can't be a master of everything.
Yeah.
So I know my...
I mean, yeah, you're in two different worlds. You are a unique cidery in that, and I haven't really seen that. I only see that with the really, really big cideries, that they're able to kick out one that's for the kind of like, you know, newcomer to cider.
Sure.
But I'll tell you, these four ciders that you presented here are delightful. So
lovely.
If that's an intro for a new cider drinker, well, hats off.
You know? It is. Yeah. Yeah, no, it...
interesting.
Yeah, I work with a lot of chefs, too. They have depth in their palate, and
yes,
so
they do.
I have the tendency to have those guys involved in our tastings. But I really, truly enjoy working with different artists, you know, like vintners, distillers, chefs, brewers. You know, I use all of those. All those artists are come here to use cider as a medium, which is the start of Natopia. This product goes through an evolution. What I did not disclose to you is that next year, March of 19, I take this product and I distill an Applejack brandy.
I was wondering if you're going to be
right
distilling.
I
was wondering.
Good.
So when you're saying this product, which one are you pointing to? All of them.
We're going to be a full brandy house right next door. We have 2,500 square feet right next door just for that. In March... I just took over 4,000 square feet to expand our barrel program. I'm also doing a meat and cheese parlor because meat and cheese goes delightful with cider.
Yes, it does. It's the perfect marriage between food and cider.
And we're doing our first cider and sausage collaboration. So I'm sending our semi-sweet and our Belgian pineapple to a sausage factory here locally in San Diego to create a sausage cider blend that we'll serve over on that side with our artisanal cheeses. But that's, you know, that's the wave of that future.
Yeah,
you know,
bringing it all together.
Yes,
it's precisely. Like a little mini world expo here.
It's a compound.
So what was this building before?
This used to be a tile factory before, and so we had to scrape this thing down to its bare roots and completely, you know, architect it to where our distribution had big capabilities through our backdoor sales, right? Don't get me wrong. I mean, we are doing a significant amount of volume out of our tasting room. It's no joke.
Imagine you
and
are.
It's packed here.
You're open like 7 days a week?
7 days a week.
Yeah. And there's not a lot of foot traffic. I mean, there's a sidewalk out front.
Yeah.
So distance between here and, like, let's say San Diego Airport, people coming in, they're going to get a lift or something up.
We get them. Oh, we get them. Between 12 to 15 minutes lift.
Easy.
Super easy.
Super easy.
Always welcome. We have lift codes on Fridays and Saturday nights for our patrons to use. So that way, you know, we have to be responsible drinkers.
Good.
Right? That's important.
Good, good.
Yeah. And tourist time is huge here. I get people from all over the world coming here just because they like craft beer, and then they pipe in gluten-free cider, and of course, who pops up? We pop up,
yeah.
And you know, it's like an aha moment. Mm. And believe it or not, we have 56 breweries on this road.
56 breweries.
8 distilleries on this road.
So there's a lot of knowledge here, a lot of working knowledge.
A lot of working knowledge.
Yeah.
A lot of working knowledge.
And is there any kind of like, oh no, cider's coming in now? A little bit of a competition edge there with the craft beer people. Not that they're not the best people in the world. Speaking as a craft beer writer for X amount of years.
Yep. Oh yeah. No, they've welcomed us, believe it or not. They have been making cider themselves. And so now they
bet
have
they
some
are.
Oh yeah.
I bet they are.
Oh yeah. And so you know, they are very welcoming, and we've done 12 collaborations with some very prominent breweries here, some very highly skilled master brewmasters.
And there's a lot here in San Diego. There's an amazing range.
If you can make it in San Diego and beverage, you can make it anywhere.
That's
just
true.
Like New York.
Yeah, it's
if
true.
You can make it here, you're set anywhere. So it's just here you better make a right, because there's a lot of consumers here that know their stuff.
They're savvy. Yeah,
they're very savvy.
So in that way, it's kudos to the craft beer scene for creating a sophisticated palate.
Absolutely.
You know, which took a long time in the craft beer scene initially.
Precisely.
We're not talking about that long ago.
No.
So if that could happen in like 20 years in the craft beer scene, imagine Newtopia Cider 20 years from now. Boom. Okay. Rick just like kind of did that spontaneous combustion thing with his hands to the head.
Yep.
Yeah. No, can relate to it.
I can.
Seriously.
Yeah. It's going to. It's the time is now. So for those of you that are listening that, you know, have the conceptual idea of doing it, it went from dream to drink in 5 years.
Yeah.
And that's real. And it's being stubborn enough to just block, you know, blow through walls and keeping your dream active, and always just, you know, always just, you know, keeping your head down, and it comes to fruition. You know, there's a lot of hard work here. This wasn't easy to build. This is a, you know, $1.5 million build out that has the production capacity to do 25,000 barrels a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're serious. This is serious.
You've got a lot going on there.
We're putting cider on the map. Not that it already hasn't been, but we're essentially giving it a little bit more exposure to the beer connoisseurs.
And a whole range of a market that people weren't thinking about in California in that way.
Right.
I mean, Apple Valley up in Watsonville and all that, people didn't even realize that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, California was such a high producer of apples nationally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Southern Cal was looked at, oh, you know, not much is going to be happening, blah, blah, you know, craft beer's got the edge in San Diego, but no. Now, there's a couple cideries in San Diego now.
Yes.
What's the count?
So, I think technically we're first to market. I think now we have a total of roughly 6 cider houses. And the
in the county, San Diego County.
San Diego County.
Right.
Now. Yeah. And they're everyone.
It's pretty wide.
Yes.
Pretty wide, just so folks realize that. That's a pretty wide map.
Very wide map. And believe it or not, each cider house, they're all distinctly different, which is fantastic. I mean, Twisted Horn, Raging Cider, Serpentine are just a few of my alliances. So we gather tightly. We share information. I've provided some insight on a few other cider houses to get up, because really it's all about all ships rise with the tide.
Absolutely.
You know,
you created a mecca for cider drinkers.
Yeah,
it could be a nice location, I think, for CiderCon.
Yes.
You know.
Oh, sunshine and cider.
And in February?
Yes.
The people, all the orchardists, yes, and people that are working so hard.
Yes.
Anyways.
Yep. No, we're my next initiative this year is creating a guild for us, so that way we can really get that information sharing involved.
Great.
And everyone's cider becomes better. I think that's important that we do that. Because it doesn't matter where a patron goes, if they go to a new cider house or one that's been in business, you know, it better be good. Because it might be their first time they're trying it.
Yeah, and you don't want them turned off, because they won't come back.
They will not come back.
Yeah, yeah.
You get one time to make an impression. Fortunately, we have some great ciders in San Diego, so I'm hoping a lot of people will start to recognize that, you know, that side of the apple spectrum. There are apples that grow down here.
Some of the varieties that are growing down here? It's all dry farming, means that there's no irrigation.
Correct.
Right.
So we'll use deep wells to extract, sometimes 5 or 6 wells on a plot. And some of the most prominent, I think, local ones that you guys would probably be aware of is Kingston Black. We also have Gold Rush. Have you seen that before?
Yeah, Gold Rush. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I have some in my...
Dude!
I grafted.
Nice.
I actually took down my old tree this year.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, Gold Rush is pretty well-known. I know Tom Oliver, and I think he does a collaboration, too, on that.
Yeah.
Number of Gold Rush.
So what I didn't tell you guys, and I haven't told the rest of the public this, but I have 10.5 acres, about 2 miles from here, on a microclimate. So it's quite unique. It rests at about 2,100 feet in elevation. It's in the foothills. But what's cool is that I get about 900 to 1,000 hours of chill. And we get Santa Anas. And so I get this really...
Santa Ana winds.
Santa
Ana
winds.
That's what he's referring to.
Yes.
Santa Ana winds.
Yeah.
Unique.
Ciderville knows that out there, but we have...
No, probably not, like El Nino and all that kind of thing. It's a very interesting climate here.
Yep.
Because of the mountains. San Diego, you fly in, you might get rerouted sometimes, mm-hmm, not hardly ever,
mm-hmm,
but it could happen because of the fog.
Mm-hmm.
You're right next to the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So he's talking about the Santa Ana winds.
And so we'll get that marine layer that comes up over into our foothills, into our microclimate pocket. It gives us that extra chill. And usually that marine layer burns off at noon. And then over the mountains from the desert comes the Santa Ana winds that changes that temperature.
Right,
so we get this big swing in temp. And Brix just goes, whoop, concentrates that sugar. And it just swings those. So, I'll give you an example. We've had anywhere between 21 to 24 Brix out of some of these varietals, which is very,
very
apple wine-ish.
Nice. Yes, it
you know?
Is. Yeah,
so,
and you don't want to be diluting that,
no.
So you're going to have to manage that.
We do.
Yeah, and you probably get taxed at different rates for all this, right?
Yeah, it's cool. So there's been some unique legislative laws I think most of us are aware
about. The Cider Act.
And the Cider Act, but federally,
in the US.
Federally we went from getting charged $1 a gallon in taxes to 7 cents a gallon in taxes, which is huge for us.
It is.
Huge. It gives the ability for a small craft cider house to make a profit.
Mm-hmm.
That was the one piece that is struggling.
Mm-hmm.
You better...
$1 a gallon is a lot.
Yes.
That adds up quickly when you're
super
talking
quickly.
About 100 gallons. Boom.
And it's all primary ferment. They look at that, you know? And then they cross that over with your taxation... bright tank, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they see how that matches up. And so that was a huge piece for us. Now, you know, this year that will swing us into being able to do other projects now with that money, you know, and growing. So that was...
And we have the orchard. 10
and we have the orchard. Yeah.
Wow.
So I don't like to rest barrels and pay for rent. And so we'll have a working barn where we'll house our cider and or spirits. We'll have an orchard that will just essentially have our Kingston Blacks. We'll have Gold Rush. We'll have maybe 4 or 5 different types of crabs. You know,
nice.
A little bit more tannic, so
nice.
I can blend in.
Yeah.
You know.
God, you're just right on the trail for.
It's time.
Greatness, yeah.
And that will be a destination. Facility where people can actually rent out and have weddings there. It'll have a small vineyard. Of course, we have to have wines. Then we'll have an orchard there, a working barn, and then an urban farm.
Is this all you, Rick?
It is. Yeah.
Do you ever sleep?
I don't. Sleep, yeah, right? I mean, No, I do, and I do, and I'm always counting apples backwards. So it puts
but
me
well,
to
you
bed.
Have a good background because you're in the libation market already, so you had that going. You knew how to run an operation. I think that's what folks need to realize. Like, you could have a cidery, but when you actually have a tasting room, now you're managing staff at a different level. You're managing people coming in, drinking, leaving your location.
Yes.
And if you don't know how to do that, that also could consume a lot of stressful time.
Oh, you're absolutely right. That's a different animal. I mean, I don't...
Not that it has to be stressful.
No.
But so, and you don't seem like a stressful person at all.
Thank you, Rita. I appreciate that.
Wow.
Thank you. Hopefully my wife will hear that.
May it always be so. I'm sure she knows.
Oh, boy.
But, you know, that's a big,
it is.
Big piece.
And, you know, when you walk into this facility, you know, it's, you know, people have their entitlement goes up. Oh, we're in a cider house. Oh, this is kind of sophisticated here. Oh, this is whimsical here.
Mm.
You know, guess what? Your service better be better than Nordstrom's, because service is universal. And it's a quiet whisper that San Diego has poor service, because when it's sunny, everyone goes to the beach. No one works in San Diego. I didn't say anything, but now you guys have an inside scoop.
Yeah.
You want good service coming winter. But no, but it's just one of those where you have to be able to provide that.
That one good service come in winter.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I just find San Diego is such a lovely area.
It
is. You can't beat it.
I tried to leave. I couldn't come back. Yeah. You know, I have a house in Seattle that we get up there still.
Are you a native of California?
I am a native of literally this little ranch. It's called Scripps Ranch.
Oh,
and
okay.
So it was initially built.
Saying Scripps Ranch, mean this area is this, called Scripps, this, where we're
correct. They were literally sitting in. There's about maybe 25,000 people here.
Wow.
It was originally used. The eucalyptus were used for railroad ties for the Chinese when we were bringing railroads in here from here to San Francisco. But they were so weak that they didn't work really well for ties, and so they brought them here.
Oh.
They brought them here. They put all of them here. They just plopped them all here, and we have 300 different types of species of. Eucalyptus here.
I didn't know there was more than one species of
300
eucalyptus.
Different types.
And they're beautiful trees. They're like a white tannish body tree. The bark is smooth.
It is.
And they're just absolutely stunning.
It
they're
is.
They're
it's
sun
like a
trees.
Skyline of skyline of eucalyptus that's super prominent. So.
We should probably get a little tour.
Let's
if
do
we
a tour.
Can.
Thank you, Rick, for hosting both The Nose and I and sharing your wealth of information and your enthusiasm. It always kind of keeps me inspired, too, and I'm sure all the folks out there in Ciderville. There are photos in the show notes. You could see me signing the Newtopia banner. There'll be a little video, too, coming out on the Cider Chat YouTube channel. I really appreciate those crawlers to go that Marion Barry. Whoa, that just blew my mind that you made with the champagne yeast. It just shows how cider in that modern style can be an incredible base for these complex flavor profiles. He had an eggnog going on. Of course, he had a chai. He heats it up, and then he's doing that graft, that fusion with wort from beer. Yeah, San Diego is a happening scene, and we'll be keeping an eye out. There's other cideries to get to, too, in that area, and so many more around the world. When I come right back, I want to share a little bit from Robbie Honda of Tanuki Cider Company in Santa Cruz, California. On episode 103 of Cider Chat, I had the good fortune to be able to feature Robbie Honda. This guy, he just has stolen my heart, and I was able to see him at CiderCon along with Nicole from Santa Cruz Cider Company and Jake from Five Mile Orchard. You know, it was like the Monterey Bay scene, and you know, obviously I have a warm spot in Ciderville in my heart for that area. My family lives there, and I lived there too. So unexpectedly today, I went down checking my mail, and I got this little letter. And he writes, "Hi Rhea, my first CiderCon experience would not be complete without raising a glass with you." He continues to write, "I intended to hand you this letter at the conference. Sorry I spaced it," and kind of makes this fun face. "Anyways, thank you for sharing the greater cider experience with all of us. You are an excellent journalist and ambassador to the cider community. Oh, man. We admire you. Man, I admire you for writing such a righteous little letter. And he does that nice little salutation, Kampai, Tanuki Cider, Santa Cruz, California. And he basically sent me a check, a total of $2 per episode for 114 episodes. So you could do the math for that. Blew me out of the water, Robbie. You cannot believe. I will immediately put this to good use. Thank you. A million zillion apples. We're putting you on the Cider Going Up campaign page for Cider Chat. This kind of like stepping out for a cidery that is a total startup. It's just getting a footing. I know life has been tough. He was working with his brother. He lost his brother who was doing the labels. There's just so much that this guy is persevering through, and he brings a beautiful flavor to Ciderville. Big tip of the glass to you, and I'm speechless. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. And to all you out there in Ciderville, we are lucky to have each other. So on this Valentine's Day when it's going live, and every single day, make it a love day in Ciderville. And this is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now with a little tear in her eye for all of you and a whole lot of love. See you soon in Ciderville.
Yeehaw!